Hey folks, it's Adam Summer. This week on the Heartland Pod, we're going to talk about the two-year anniversary of January 6th and the Brazilian connection, a yeah-no about a new conservative sexual predator, Josh Hawley gets called out by somebody other than us, and, well, of course, the speaker vote. Support all of our shows at heartlandpod.com and click the Patreon link to sign up today. Lots to do, so let's go. Hello and welcome back to the Heartland Pod. Again, my name is Adam Summer. I am your host. This is the regular Monday show, our Talkin' Politics show, with myself and my regular co-hosts, Rachel Parker and Sean Diller, who will join us in a moment. I'm a lawyer. Rachel's a writer. Sean works in politics. That's where we're coming from with our show produced right here in Missouri, where we take a look at politics. Together, we bring big topics of the week with a special focus on the Heartland as we bring our middle-out approach to politics and work to change the conversation. We'll bring you shows 5 days a week, including Fridays. We have the Flyover View, which is a nice recap with Kevin Smith as the host. We have the Delta this Wednesday that rotates with High Country with Sean Diller. So the Delta with Christine and Nicholas Linke comes out every other Wednesday, and High Country with Sean Diller. And of course, now our newest show, Dirt Road Democrat, hosted by the one and only Jess Piper, which will be a Thursday show. And we're hoping to have that every week. Might not be every week, but we're going to try to have it for you every single week if we can. You can support what we do by leaving a rating and review on the podcast app of your choice. So wherever you're listening to this, if you're not streaming it directly on your browser, if you're on an app, you can always find a place to give it a rating and write a review. Please share reviews. We're getting some new reviews in, and so I'm going to put some of those together and we'll read some of them on an episode. So, you know, give us some reviews, make something funny. I don't know, make it entertaining. Maybe yours will be one that I choose to share, but it really does help. So tap the 5 stars and leave a review for other folks. You can also follow us on all your preferred social media with @TheHeartlandPod. And there's some handles for Rachel and Sean and I in the show notes if you want to follow us personally. And yeah, we really appreciate all the support. We've got some new folks over on Patreon who are supporting the shows, and we love it. We love seeing it. It is very helpful. All of our shows are independent. This is all, you know, we finance it from whatever we get from our patrons, and then whatever the difference is comes out of pocket. So that's how we make these shows. So it's very, very helpful for us when you sign up at Patreon, and you can do that over at heartlandpod.com. Click the link for Patreon to sign up and join us. All right, I have an opening statement for you, very brief, and then we will get into the talking politics section of the show with Rachel and Sean right after my open. We are now a few days removed from the 2-year anniversary of the insurrection attempted on January 6, 2021. Many, including me, continue to see that date not merely as a day of remembrance, but a flashpoint in American democracy. Many misguided individuals cajoled into a perversion of the very ideals upon which our country and government stand took up arms in an effort to undo that very democracy. Abraham Lincoln once said, "We the people are the rightful masters of both Congress and the courts, not to overthrow the Constitution, but to overthrow the men who pervert the Constitution." It is a call not to meet such an attack in kind, but to meet it with political action and the power of the ballot box. In 2022, we saw that power on display as, for one of the few times in American history, the party holding the presidency had a positive midterm outcome. The Senate remains in the hands of the Democratic Party, while the House is barely in GOP control, even more remarkable when you consider the reality of gerrymandering. In its first week, the House, now under the basic control of Republicans, showed that the Republican Party, at large, is still laser-focused on stripping the federal government for parts while prosecuting personal grievance and vendettas of a failed leader whose very words were the basis of an attack on January 6th. 22 months from now, we as a nation will go back to the ballot box to make another choice, to exercise the power to overthrow those who pervert the Constitution. To do so, we cannot wait for a savior or a new special candidate. We, the people, must prepare and begin now doing the work to make that outcome a reality. Otherwise, we risk more of the same.
Talking Politics.
All right, we're here for Talking Politics. We've got the usual gang. I've got myself, Adam Summer, Sean Diller, and Rachel Parker. We're going to get into, we've got four topics for you, but we have a pretty special focus on one, and I bet you can guess what it is before I even tell you. It's the speaker vote from this past week. Of course it is. So that'll be the big one. We'll spend most of our time there, but we've got some other stuff to talk about as well. As always, we'll kick it off here, a little recap. I had a pretty normal week back to work. So, remembering how that works and putting regular clothes on every day and all that, all the stuff that goes with that, all the trimmings. Good week, busy week, and been a good weekend with the family. We made some veggie burgers tonight. My son Ben, he's about to turn 8 this year. He got a kid chef cookbook for Christmas.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And so he's been picking recipes out, and so he wanted to make these veggie burgers. And veggie is a loose term because they have eggs and Greek yogurt or sour cream in them.
So they're not vegan yogurts, though. They're not vegan burgers.
No,
they're
no,
veggie
no, no, no.
burgers.
They're, yeah. Some non-veggie they're, ingredients. I think that's a given. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. But it's like chickpeas was like the base ingredient for it.
Sure.
So.
Sure.
And they were pretty good. It reminded me a lot of the cheap, shitty frozen chicken patties.
Yep.
I lived on those for a while. Like, so that's what it reminded me of. The ones I think Sean and I both used to get them all the time in high school. The chicken patty option. So
right.
You could always get
spicy
chicken. Yeah, spicy chicken.
The one alternative.
But yeah, so it's good, and I'm sipping on I've got a green tea, and I've got a Colorado Native backup as a beer when I'm done with my tea. So what's going on with me, Rachel Parker? How about you? How was the week, and what you sipping on?
Oh, the week was, I mean, wow. I've got, because I work for myself, I can kind of dial it in when I want to. So I was able to kind of slowly on ramp back into like a normal non-holiday week, right. Which is to say, which is another way of saying I didn't have much work to do. And I did more stuff this weekend. So that gave me plenty of time to just like stare at screens and
digest.
Just roll my eyes like just the self. This is truly, I've heard other people say this, truly the week of self-owns. We'll get into that more. And in the true spirit of what a sobering week it was, I am sipping on water. Just good old, just out of the telltale green water flask. I'm just drinking water tonight.
Nice.
And I'll say, speaking of veggies, I made, we will occasionally get soy riso, soy chorizo, uh-huh. which is normally pretty reliable. This stuff was very good. It was very tasty. It was I was like, is this, did they put ground up Doritos in this? Like, it's so, it was so salty.
I support
I'm telling
that.
You guys. So Dorito, salty.
Doritos are always, I mean.
But it has that saltiness, like just the ultra concentrated Dorito saltiness. But it was chorizo. That's the other reason for the water, is because I'm fantastically dehydrated right
Bring
now.
Bring yourself back down to earth.
Yeah, I was like, why did I eat the chorizo?
Let your blood flow again.
Yeah, I should just have had the fucking pork. It was gonna be like this.
Sean Diller, how about you, man? How's the week? What you sipping on?
Doing well. Thanks. It was definitely a slow on ramp back to work over here also. So like, my daughter's in preschool, and, they like, every time they have a long break, they also get definitely the Monday off after. And then this year, like the Monday was New Year's observed, So they got that off, obviously. And then they then got Tuesday off as professional development. Like after
that's how a lot
break.
Of the schools were. Yeah. Like ours was like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, I understand, and I'll never ding a school or a teacher for taking time off, because it's hell trying to work in a classroom. I'll just, I don't know.
you've been there, so done hard. That. It makes sense to give them a day to just get your bearings. Like,
right. And we should have had way more professional development too, because it's like, how do you cope with working in a classroom? But anyway, so I haven't worked in like 3 weeks or something, it seems like. My preschooler just has unbounded energy, so she went back on Wednesday, finally got to work. And I'm in the elections business, so after the midterms we went from having like 15 clients to 2 clients, and so it's that really fun time of year where it's like, let's reach out to the Riverside County California Democratic Party and see if they need anything. And they did. Yeah. So
awesome.
We're working with them.
Very cool. Very cool. Coast to coast, man. You can say that now officially. That's awesome.
And I did, we've done a bunch of work out there in Palm Springs, actually, from some really good, a really good network we have. But there's just these asshole constitutional sheriffs, like Oath Keeper types. But anyway, I just slacked you guys this tuna steak that I made also tonight.
Ooh.
And it was pretty awesome. Sprouts, $8.99 a pound. And
excellent.
I'll see you and raise you some soy rizo if you want.
Oh, God. That tuna steak looks amazing.
Thanks. Yeah.
Holy crap. The little
it's too
bad
rare,
radio.
You're too old.
But that's that's beautiful. That's perfect. A little sesame seed going on. Well done, sir. Well
yeah, done. That's the nice pink metal. That's what you want.
That's gorgeous. Thanks. All right. Well, let's jump into our tuna steak here.
Is this the McCarthy one or what? I don't even know
what
it would have been funny for anyone.
Yeah, sometimes the transition just works. the true or false. 2 years later, January 6th, of course, has come and gone. It's been a 2 year anniversary of an incredibly sobering event. And so the true or false is 2 years later, we are in a better place as a democracy from where we were at that point. Obviously, there was, you know, the immediate aftermath felt like holy crap for a long time. And then it felt to me like it kind of started to shift a little bit, like the rubber band started to come back maybe. And then we had the 2022 midterms where it was like, oh, a lot of people stood up and said, no, like, we're not leaving our party necessarily. Like a lot of Republicans, it felt like we're just like, we're not necessarily leaving the Republican Party, but we are not interested in this brand of, you know, authoritarianism masquerading as standard American politics. So I don't know. What do you think? True or false on it? You know, we have the Medal of Honor recipients and all of that. And we'll get into some discussion here about the Electoral College. And of course, what's going on in Brazil is kind of a mirror of it. So I will tell you, I actually think true. I think it's caused people to pay better attention, not just more attention, but better quality attention to what's going on. And so I think that increases democracy when the citizenry in general is paying the kind of attention that we're paying right now. So that's where I come down on it. Sean, why don't you kick us off here?
Yeah, totally. So I definitely think it's true. And, you know, I started nodding my head immediately when you were reading the question, like, you know, we've come so far, and it's so good that it is so, you know, I think unequivocally true. But when you think back, like, it was not a given that this is the direction things would go.
Right.
And, you know, all I can really think of, you know, when I realized like it could have gone totally differently. And then what you said, like, you know, the midterms, a lot of people stood up and directly said, you know, we want, in our democracy, we want to elect people who will respect the elections. And like Joe Biden's speech right before the midterms, I think was a big part of voters' choice in November. So I think, you know, we might be answering.
By the way,
this.
None of the major networks carried. Just want to reiterate how fucked up that is that nobody carried it. Anyway, sorry, go ahead. Because I thought it was awesome. I thought it was a great speech. And the most of the daytime networks were like, do we need to cut away to this? Who cares? No big deal.
I didn't see it either. I didn't watch it. I read about it. And I heard conservatives like whining about it. That's when they said he was being divisive. And that's really what I think, you know, framed the entire election. And, you know, similarly framed Biden's run against Trump the first time after Charlottesville, you know, that chaos. And Mitch McConnell mentioned this too multiple times, you know, like voters did choose a functioning democracy over chaos.
Right.
And, you know, Trump's obsession with the 2020 election, which was what January 6th was about, you know, their inability to shift from that. And so many Republicans have said this many, many times, but like at the end of the day, like they kept talking about politics, like the people who were fomenting January 6th couldn't stop talking about elections, which are not really about people's lives, is what I always say. You know, it's like they fell into the trap that, you know, losers in politics often do, like they focus too much on elections and who won and who was wronged and, you know, what some politician deserves.
Right.
And I'm so glad, you know, that is a variable that, you know, it helped us move past January 6th and all these idiots as a country.
Yeah,
for sure.
I think that's right. And now we've got the Medal of Honors that went out this past January 6th, kind of symbolizing the day. Eugene Goodman, of course, which I would be fine if we started calling January 6th Eugene Goodman Day. He, of course, for folks who don't recall, Eugene Goodman is the officer who stood at the top of the stairs heroically directing a mob of people, a mob of like violent insurrectionists away from Congress onto himself with right. no, you know, thought for life or limb, just did that. I mean, terribly heroic. Of course, Michael Fanone is getting one. Carolyn Edwards, posthumously Brian Sicknick is getting one. Shea Moss, if you recall. Who testified at the January 6th hearings, her mother, Ruby Freeman, who were election workers in Georgia, Rusty Bowers, the Arizona House Speaker, who also was very vocal, and some other folks. So a lot of folks who stood up and were counted, you know, counted among the people who wanted to defend democracy are being honored in an incredible way. And I think that's wonderful. Rachel, you know, you jumped on the Brazil stuff that happened today as we're recording this. It's still kind of pretty fresh for folks who didn't see it. There was basically the exact same thing.
Yeah, it's still unfolding. Yeah.
Yeah. In and Brazil.
It's understandably a lot of questions as to who in the United States may have helped facilitate an attack that is so yeah. close to the anniversary of January 6th. So Brazil.
Well, Bolsonaro, of course, who is now living in Florida.
Right. He's in Orlando right now.
Yeah.
I wonder who he could be hanging out with. By the way, I don't really know who he's been hanging out with, to be utterly clear, but there's already speculation that he may be extradited to the United States because he's a fucking idiot and he's in the United States the day that he clearly like helped plant. It's so ridiculous.
Right. But, I wonder if there's some federal crime we could quickly indict and pick him up on.
Well, I mean, also, if he's cooperate, there's probably so, right? Because he's cooperating. If he's cooperating with American citizens, that's grounds for arrest probably. But right now, so this was the day that they were supposed to have their peaceful transition of power, and in their the equivalent of their House of Congress in Brasilia, it just looks like January 6th, like thousands of people have mobbed the Capitol.
There's a crazy guy in like horns and shit, like,
yeah, I don't know if they have their own QAnon shaman.
They did. I saw on Twitter there was like a side by side of like this crazy guy in Brazil and the QAnon shaman. Okay. It was like very similar.
Oh fuck me! All right, I did see that there were people like also kind of like wearing sort of like quasi paramilitarist uniforms and stuff. Unlike our January 6th, though, they've already arrested hundreds of people.
Yeah,
hundreds of people have been arrested. And Bolsonaro has, much to my, just what a full of shit asshole, what a piece of shit he is. He's been like, hey, now, I'm a big law and order guy. We got to respect democracy. You're like, oh, do we? Okay. Like, I think he's feeling some of the heat. Even, what's her fuck, the prime minister of Italy, right. She was like, oh, I do declare this. Shall not continue. This demonstration of anti-democratic behavior must stop. I don't know what she, you know, I made her foghorn leghorn. But anyway,
what's amazing is like they're already talking about extraditing him to Brazil to face the music for this thing. Trump stood with the people and gave a speech beforehand, and still like he still hasn't been charged for anything. Like this guy's not even in the country while they're doing the attack, and they're still like, yes. Well, it's clearly your yes. fault.
Yes. Yeah, of course. Yeah, naturally.
Like we know who to blame here. It's obviously your fault.
Yeah, and I don't know how the laws here differ versus there, and if they have more kind of we'll say cut and dry kind of anti corruption laws and things like that. I don't know. Anyway, the question was, so my heart goes out to Brazil. I wish Glenn Greenwald wasn't such a piece of shit because he would be somebody that I would normally be reading right about now because he lives in Brazil. He's done a ton of reporting. His reporting in Brazil is fantastic. It's really too bad that he had to turn into an idiot. But anyway, the question is, are we in a better place as a democracy? And, you know, if I go back to like 2019, 2020 timeframe,
yeah,
I'm looking at a world in tatters, right? I'm looking at probably the only stable democracy in the world being Germany. That's like a major economy. I mean, you could say that,
right.
You know, Holland is a stable economy and Denmark is a stable democracy, and that, you know, the Nordics are stable democracies, but they're tiny economies. When you're talking about like countries that move the needle economically or in the world, it wasn't looking good. I mean, even things in India are still pretty fragile. So to see the utter about face of the midterms was so stunning. I mean, we didn't really know. I mean, we talked about it all the time and we followed the polls and stuff as close as anybody does, except for actual pollsters. And we were like, I mean, we think it's going to be closer than everybody's saying, but we don't, I had a strong feeling that this was the end of Trumpism, that I wanted to believe that because of what I was reading and
which we've talked about on some of the shows, like that we thought that maybe this was it.
Yeah, because he wasn't around. I mean, that was really the thing, is I was like, I don't think you can do this without him. I don't think it's gonna work. I don't think unless you have this guy saying this ridiculous shit. I don't think anybody else can say this ridiculous shit. I think he's the only person that could say this ridiculous shit. And I think if you're the person that says this ridiculous shit, you don't sound like Trump. You sound like a fucking idiot. Like, he's the only one that could do it. So to watch, you know, the national media, first of all, contextualize these elections in probably a slightly better way than they had before, at least on the state level, talking about how important it is to elect secretaries of state and so forth, and swing states and stuff. So to see those victories, I think was the most surprising and important thing to me. So I'm more confident because of the January 6th committee, and because like just the normal law and order stuff that happens when people break the law. Like, we didn't need a whole new set of laws to prosecute people that were in the Capitol. And they've prosecuted, even if they weren't arrested the day of, which is nonsense, but they have been arrested since then. And many people who were normal, average, everyday Americans who did what they did in part because Trump told them, have to face real criminal penalties.
Right.
And just as we said all along, we did talk about this a lot. Normal ass people don't like getting charged with, don't like getting convicted with felonies.
Right. And all of them have been like, yo, I was there because of Trump.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't
except
like,
for the eye patch guy.
I don't like house arrest. I was arrested. You're like, yeah, bitch, that's what happens when you commit a federal fucking crime. You're arrested. So yeah, Stuart Rhodes getting, you know, convicted of whatever the law is that hasn't been broken in like 50 years, like
seditious insurrection.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't know what else to say. True. We are in a better footing than we were 2 years ago for sure.
All right, moving along.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
Okay. The yeah no. This one doesn't have to be long. If you haven't seen this story, because there is a lot of stuff to sort through right now, but here's the headline. This is actually a Daily Beast article where I think this dropped for the first time. Herschel Walker staffer says that Matt Schlapp groped my crotch. And if you don't know who Matt Schlapp is, that's okay. But he is, well, in the world of conservative politics, he's important. He's the chair of the American Conservative Union and is one of the absolute key players, lead organizers for CPAC, which is, it is the conservative version of Comic-Con. It's like conservative Comic-Con.
That's good. I thought you were going to say something on the Democratic Party side, and I was immediately going to say, except 10 times bigger.
Yeah.
But no, so Comic-Con is a good...
Yeah. They put on their armbands and their costumes, and their favorite people from their favorite shows get on the, yeah, exactly. They take pictures. They have like weird displays going on. They had a couple CPACs ago. They had the somebody in a cell, like they had like a January 6th person, the defendant, like in a cell to like.
My personal, before we get into my personal favorite CPAC moment after, of course, when, I don't know, probably 10 years ago now, Mitch McConnell held up that fucking AR-15. Mm-hmm. He was like, just holding up a gun. Like, what are you doing with that, sir? Like, he looked like he could barely hold it up there. Is the moment in what was the Sacha Baron Cohen movie that he made?
Oh yeah, yeah,
right,
yeah.
Before, like it was his Borat. It's like his Borat sequel.
Yeah, Borat 2. Yeah, he goes in and gets Mike Pence.
Oh man, that is one of the greatest things. If you haven't seen it, I know it's a really super gross out weird movie, but my God, he goes in a Trump costume onto the floor of CPAC looking for Mike Pence. It's one of the greatest cinematic moments in history. That's my favorite CPAC moment. Sorry, continue. I apologize.
Yeah, but that's really it. It's just a yeah-no of this guy. He allegedly, and has now been reported multiple places, This Walker staffer has been very vocal about it. Basically bought, you know, Schlapp bought this guy some drinks. Guy, Schlapp, conservative CPAC, bought this fella some drinks. And after a couple of trips to different bars, whatever, they were in the same car, and Schlapp grabbed his crotch and went right after him. So, you know, just some good old-fashioned family values, classic Republican Party stuff. Just yet another sex offender from the conservative right, the hardcore conservative. I'm not talking about Republicans in general. I'm talking about the hardcore conservative right that wants to tell us what family values are, how to be a family, how to be a good person, how to be a Christian, all that stuff that goes with it.
0% of the time includes being homosexual. Let's just be clear.
Right. Who are extremely anti-LGBTQ plus, like, everything, like, hate all of it, want to outlaw most of it, are constantly attacking trans persons, like those people. Yeah. So it's just a, yeah, no, I don't know. That's what I have for it. Any other thoughts there? Yeah, no. All right.
Yeah, Sean's just shaking his head.
Yeah, no, on this one. Yeah.
Yeah. Sean was just, for the listeners at home, Sean just had his mic on mute and was just shaking his head side to side. Just, yeah. So, okay. Well, let's move on to something more substantive. Okay. The buy or sell comes to us, thankfully, from Missouri, because Lucas Kuntz is back. So the buy or sell is this: Josh Hawley can be unseated in 2024. And I want to make sure I get his name right.
It's actually Josh Hawley.
Yeah. So can he be unseated? Thank you, Zach, by the way. Can he be unseated in 2024? Lucas Kuntz has announced his candidacy. He has put out a very good video. Good enough as getting some serious national attention. If I got a screenshot here. I Googled, this was, I think, yesterday, or no, this might have been from this morning. I just Googled Lucas Kuntz just to see what would come up. And it was pops up a political story, a Guardian story from The Advocate, The New Republic. And if you click the more news button, it's just the same story over and over and over again. And it was just like every copy editor was just like, oh, I get to write a Josh Hawley is a coward headline. This is going to be great. So if you haven't seen the ad, there is a link for it in our show notes. You can also just go to Lucas Kuntz's website and watch it. But I will say it sounds like something if you listen to our shows, you could have written this ad just by like pulling clips from our shows, basically. How it talks about Hawley. So. Buy or sell, what do you guys think? Hawley can be unseated in 2024. Rachel, why don't you lead us off here?
Oh, you would start with me.
I would. Cam, I am, and I will.
I mean, it's a really good question. I will buy that. I think of all the sort of statewide figures that have a national profile who are from Missouri and can raise money and do all those things, based on what we just saw in our 2022 cycle, I think Lucas Kuntz is the guy for the job. I was hoping, I said this to both of you individually. I believe I've said on the podcast that my hope was that he was going to run against Josh Hawley because he can. I mean, the thing I like about it, so fuck it, I'll buy it. Sure, why not? Yeah.
Said it last week and then he announced. Yeah, we were.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And here's just a quick refresher. 2018, Hawley won with 1.25 million votes. Claire McCaskill lost with 1.11 million votes. McCaskill basically got the same number of votes in that cycle that Schmidt got in this cycle.
Right.
And McCaskill got 300,000, roughly a little more than that, 300,000 more
Trudy.
Votes than Trudy Bush Valentine.
Yeah. So here's some logic. I'm going to throw this out. The reason Josh Hawley won in 2018 was because of Donald Trump. That's it. He won because of Donald Trump. Donald Trump came to Missouri to campaign for him. They brought Sean Hannity. They went down to Cape together.
They went to Columbia.
They
went to St. Charles.
They went all over the place. He was then a very much sanctioned rising star in the party. He was the attorney general. He had all kinds of, as you would say, Adam, conservative bona fides. He'd clerked for the Supreme Court, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Roberts.
He had written a very important, he'd been very active and important sort of, you know, far right Christian legislation, including the Hobby Lobby case. He didn't try the case, by the way. He wrote an amicus brief.
Yeah, he wrote it. Yeah,
whatever. Big fucking deal. But they did all, they set him up. They set him up. He went to all the right schools and they set him up on the Hobby Lobby case on purpose so that he would have a platform. And he squeaked by with a solid victory during a midterm election when Trump was really popular in Missouri. Trump is still very popular, right, in Missouri. However, things have changed.
It's also worth pointing out in 2018, Claire, her election prior to that, let's not ever forget the man, the myth, the legend.
Yes, yes, she was running
Todd
against
legitimate rape Aiken.
Todd legitimate rape Aiken.
She was running against a terrible candidate. And wasn't there a third party person that pulled some votes from Aiken too?
Maybe that, wasn't that makes sense.
I think there might have been.
There usually is a Libertarian candidate in Missouri, but they're usually like 3-4%. So
yeah, so it was. She spent a lot. She had a lot of money to spend. She spent a lot of money. I think that she ignored St. Louis too much. I think that it was just a different time, and she was put in, I think, a pretty terrible position by the Republicans in the Senate at the time. She was the one that basically had to kill she either had to vote for Gorsuch or kill the judicial filibuster. So she was like, well, I can't vote for that guy. So then she was tarred with the image of being the woman that wouldn't vote for Trump's Supreme Court pick right before
the deciding vote.
So it was a bad climate for her in Missouri. Great climate for a Republican with a pulse. And she said this is what, remember what she said. She said, I'm not an idiot. Look at what he is. He's younger than me. He's telegenic. He has a great resume. And it was his year. I mean, what am I gonna tell you guys? Like, she lost very gracefully. I'll say that. I thought she really took it on the chin. But I know that Lucas Kuntz can raise money.
Right.
If he's not primaried, no one primary him, please. Nobody. Zero people primary Lucas Kuntz. Like, no one primary him. But he does need to spend more time, I personally think, in St. Louis during the primary, because there will be one. I mean, there's gonna have to be some kind of primary. Because honey, this is where all the Democrats are. You have to come here. You've spent a lot of time here. Like, right, you don't have to be here as much during the general, but when you are in a primary, you got to go where the Democrats are. And the Democrats are mostly in St. Louis. I said that over and over and over again. So I think he being Lucas Kuntz has learned a lot probably about Missouri. I bet you he's going to spend a hell of a lot more time here as a candidate this next time around. He's signaling to us that he has got the knowledge, the experience, the resources, the organizational skills, all the things to be a credible candidate. And the thing that's really gonna shave Josh Howley's hide, and I'm so excited, is that Lucas Kuntz works for the American Economic Liberties Project, and that organization focuses on antitrust. That's right. Their
Lucas Kuntz's job is all the stuff that Josh Hawley wishes
pretends
he could do, basically.
It's his job.
Right.
So if Josh utters a word about like woke media or we have to break up big tech, Lucas Kuntz is going to be like, yeah, we do. I work for the organization that's actually trying to pass legislation that you wouldn't fucking vote for. So like, I cannot wait for that aspect of it.
Well, and
that I'm really excited
about.
He's
done a good job of setting up. It was part of what I alluded to. It. I wrote, if folks haven't seen, I shared it on Twitter, but I wrote just a quick op-ed that went in the Missouri Times on Friday about this race and why I think it's good that Lucas Kuntz is running and why I'm in for it. Personally, I think it's a good thing to support. And one of those reasons is like you mentioned, Rachel, not only can he say, oh yeah, I've already said that, he can say, I've already said that and I said it on Fox News. Like he's completely put himself in that position. But what's going to be interesting, and Sean, this is where I want to kick it over to you, is one of the things that I saw, like comments on the video that he put out, which had like over 1 million views by Saturday, lots and lots of comments, and a bunch of folks kept commenting about how he's got to get into the rural areas. He's got to get into the rural areas and work on flipping voters in the rural areas and driving Democratic turnout there. And, you know, Rachel's saying he's got to spend time in St. Louis. a lot of folks are saying he's got to spend time rural.
Only in the primary. Only in the primary. He's got to spend time in St. Louis. He can tell us to fuck off after the primary.
The question that I want to like flip to Sean is like, when you're talking about places that are 60-40, you know, and I will say like where I live is like a 60-40 county, and the Democratic turnout is usually fairly like static. So like, what's the, you know, what's your cost benefit? If you're working on a campaign like that, if you're looking at that and thinking, how do we maximize our resources? Are you focusing on, can I find these pockets, these like 20, 30 people in these, you know, 20,000 person counties? Or is it, can I get 200 more people over here, 200 more people? Like, how do you spend that? You know, is there a cost benefit there that you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And this is the stuff that I, you know, love as like a campaign operative.
I didn't
like
even have this written down. It just came up. So I was just, you know.
That was very good.
Just giving myself a host pat.
A host pat because like that is the perfect bullet to fire at Sean too. Like just like that just went right to him.
No, yeah. You're basically asking me like, how do you beat Josh Hawley in a state that Trump won by 18 points?
Yeah.
And, you know, because what you said, Rachel, right away, it's like you can't actually move from concentrated urban areas to any kind of real organizing in rural areas after the primary because the section of time is only 2 months.
Right.
So like you look at how Fetterman won Pennsylvania, he won every single county in the primary against, Connor Lamb.
Yeah.
And he had already won statewide, of course. So that worked for him. You know, that's how he won. But like Pennsylvania went for Biden, you know, and, you know, Georgia, I was looking at the money, you know, I think Lucas Kuntz has proven that he can raise money. I think it looks like he raised something like 4 million last cycle.
And there's a question, Hawley, like, what would he have raised, you know, if Trudy Bush Valentine doesn't swoop
correct.
In,
that's right.
You know, if she doesn't Dr. Leo Marvin his dream house and swoop in with her bag full of money.
Right. Well, and even that, like, it's not even sucking up resources because I looked up hers too, she spent $3.4 million and like got beat, you know, badly.
Right.
The another number I'll throw into the mix, Raphael Warnock, Senator Warnock of Georgia, spent $126 million to beat Herschel Walker in a state that also Biden won.
Right.
So,
and he was an incumbent.
Right. So that's really what we're talking about. So it's like, can he raise a magnitude 37X of what Trudy spent?
Right.
You know, and I do think there is a path if everything is perfect, you know, and like kind of like how everything was perfect for Hawley in 2018, you know, to beat a heavyweight like Senator McCaskill. Part of how he won and something that's going to be different for Hawley is that he had no voting record at all before. And that includes January 6th when
he had no real record. He had, like Rachel said, like he had a resume. He had a sterling resume, and he had one ad that he had cut that made him look like a liar, but that in the end, of course, didn't really matter. But other than that, we knew very little about this man.
And you have to really, you know, I've seen this happen on campaigns. I'm sure it happens on both sides, but like you get really excited about something that you're going to use as a cudgel against somebody.
Right.
And it's hard to kill somebody with a cudgel.
Right.
So like I think about in 2018, the idea that he was like climbing the ladder, right? And like Kuntz mentions this and he, you know, moves past it quickly, which I was glad about. But it's like everyone knows that he said he wasn't going to run for Senate. Then he did. But at the end of the day, if you're wondering who's going to be the senator you vote for or who do you want representing you in the Senate, like you can get past that pretty easily if you think that, you know, he's got the background that you otherwise would want.
Well, and it also goes into that category of like dog bites man is not news. Man bites dog is. Politician lies about ambition is not news.
Right. Isn't. Yeah. And I mean, Claire, I think, was smart to, she didn't focus on that. Like she spent ads about how she was endorsed by the Border Patrol Union. You know, she ran a really solid campaign and that's part of how she got so close to holding onto her seat. So another thing that I wanted to address to you guys. So here's another thing that's different from 2018. Claire couldn't run as aggressively on abortion as Kuntz is going to be able to. And it's already going to 100%. Be animating a ton more, you know, swing and Democratic.
And there may be, if it doesn't get killed in, you know, in the legislative chamber, there could be an abortion amendment on for 2024 in Missouri as well.
Right, right. Yeah. And so that'll be, you know, he'll have to thread the needle. And if he doesn't look like he's trying to talk out of both sides of his mouth, you know, that would be really helpful. So like, you know, hopefully he's got a great answer on like why it's important that women don't have politicians between them and their doctor right. if they're pregnant. You know,
and a and better not... answer than what he was using, because he, Lucas, like many white Judeo-Christian men, okay, of a certain age, Lucas changed his position. He did. We know he did because he's on the record for having done so. It was a big deal in the primary. It came up a lot, and it does matter to a certain extent, but there is a way to talk about that. And I think I've done that because Rachel, you and I have talked about this. We talked about it literally at the rally in Warrensburg when we were recording live about how if you'd asked me 2 years ago, I still would have said, I'm pro-choice. I think abortion itself is a horrible thing, and I wish it was, you know, I hope it's safe but rare, you know, blah, 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 but it should be legal. And now I will say to you, I am pro-abortion because I've been educated on the procedures and what abortion is and how the term has been weaponized itself from a medical term to a political term. And there's a way to talk about it that way that makes sense to people to just say, I gained all this information and it changed my position.
Well, And I'll just say really quickly that I think that one of the what will go down as one of the greatest political miscalculations in a century is overturning Roe v. Wade.
Right.
It was always this solid thing that Republicans had that would just absolutely garner all of their voters behind a single issue. It was the greatest single issue ever invented in politics. A horrible one.
It makes it possible to talk about abortion without ever saying abortion, because you can now just say they want to take away your rights. I don't. I want to restore your rights.
You can just say like I'm pro-abortion now. It's like the whole.
No, I don't think we're there.
You don't think we're there?
No, you can't.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I think you can.
I don't think you can with now. A lot of voters, like with some of the voters that they're going to need to peel off. They're going to need a little group of voters to peel from Hawley over to Kuntz, and Missouri's just. Got plenty of those voters. Like we're a swingy state in a lot of ways, but I do think that with those people, you can say he's anti your rights. I'm pro your rights, and that lands.
Yeah. However it is though, I think there's plenty of people that are like, we didn't think you were ever going to do this. Like we didn't think it was going to be impossible for a woman to get an abortion when she was sexually assaulted. We didn't mean that shit. Like this is insane.
I have two more things just really fast before we go to where I contrast with you guys. The populist thing, I don't think it's going to be as great for Kuntz as you guys kind of expressed. I think the Democrat would have to be a populist like that to have a chance, but I think it's a wash. And the primary thing, let's have a competitive primary with more women and people of color jumping in. I will never say clear the field.
And here are some names, speaking of. Some potentials. I was texting with another political mind the other day, and we were just kind of throwing names out. Casey Mayor Quentin Lucas, Brian Williams, state senator out of St. Louis, who is not necessarily the most popular guy, but black man. Crystal Quaid, Jay Nixon, Peter Meredith, and of course, Claire McCaskill.
I would love to see Representative Quaid run. I would love it. I would support her. Awesome.
She's good.
I would love her to run for governor.
Yeah. I like her. I'd like her to climb the state ladder. Like maybe bad. Maybe Secretary of State. Like maybe like. I would take like the, for her to take stay. The candor path.
I would like for her to stay in Missouri and whip these fools into shape.
Yeah, but it's something for Lucas though. Don't forget, he acts like a politician and looks like one, but he's never won an election. Still,
that's true. That's a good point.
It's true. But I think that also helps his whole outsider shtick a whole lot that he's never won an election. I think he could just do that all day. The reason, final thing. Here's why I don't really want a big dramatic primary, because we don't have any fucking money in Missouri. We don't have enough resources in Missouri. It's one thing to have a competitive primary in the only swing district left in the state, right? That's one thing. Okay, there's more than five Democrats, and there's one place where a couple of them might actually be able to go to Congress outside of the first and the fourth and
the fifth.
When you get a lot of people in a field like that, it does create it. The resources just start to get very thin very quickly, and that's if we lived anywhere else, I'd be like, yeah, dude. Be one of 10. I don't give a shit. But we don't have enough resources here to have enough people. Like, and He's fine. Like, let him run. Just let him do it. Just like everybody get out of his way. Let him do his thing.
I think it's the pragmatic answer at this point.
Yeah. I'm just like.
I would normally agree with what Sean's saying. This is one of the few times I don't, because, and here, let me make it very simple for you. And I can really, really simplify it here. Hold on.
It's actually George Harley.
That's my whole point.
Oh, sorry. Lucas is a veteran, right? It's so great.
Yeah.
Last time he seemed like the kind of veteran who's going to come home and get you great financing on a Buick. In this ad, he acts like he can slit your throat, which I like. So let's see that.
All right. Well, let's move on here to the big one.
And now the big one.
All right. The big one. And this one, I'm going to channel my best Catherine O'Hara. And this one we're talking about.
Come on! That was great. Thank you.
Home Alone, the first one is much better than the second one, but the way she delivers the Kevin line in the second one is like, it reaches a new plane of existence, of sound. It's a whole thing. She's amazing. Anyway, so Kevin McCarthy is officially the Speaker of the House. I was going to do a Diaries from the Hill. I dropped it because there was too much to do here. There was already too much.
I think we should just let some people in under the kimono a little bit. So Adam sent Sean and I a text. So we did this Diaries from the Hill thing, which is like Adam's idea of a radio drama.
Yeah.
And it was so
corny. It's not my idea of one. It just is a radio. It's a satirical radio drama.
And it made Sean physically uncomfortable. and it was super corny. And Sean, on like while we were taping, I think it made it the episode. Said, don't ever make me do that again. And so when Adam was like, can we do another one? We were like, okay, buddy, this isn't going to happen again. This is unprecedented historically.
Yeah.
So I was kind of excited. Oh, well, that's all right.
I let it roll. I let it ride because if you haven't seen it yet, I shared it on Twitter through the Heartland Pod account on Twitter. And it's everywhere. If you don't know what bad lip reading is, if you've never seen this stuff, these guys who take the best ones.
My favorite.
Yeah.
It's my favorite.
And one of the best ones they do the NFL every year, and it's really, really good. So they did a bad lip reading, and it's better than anything I could have done for the Diaries from the Hill. It's just perfect. So check out the bad lip reading video. It's really, really funny. And they nailed it. So Kevin McCarthy's the Speaker. It only took 15 votes. So I don't know what the big hubbub was about. It was only
the public humiliation of someone who's supposedly powerful.
Okay. I'm with you now. Rachel, you were perhaps noshing on this the most succulently of anybody.
I fucking hate him so much. I fucking hate that guy so much. Let's just remind ourselves that this was a guy who privately told Trump to call off the goon squad to call off the insurrection on January 6th.
Correct.
And then publicly went to Mar-a-Lago right after it was over to suck the man's penis.
Correct.
That happened.
Took a picture like a standing next to Trump looking like a dog taking a shit.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Like, I love him. He's great. And I love how he's one of these California Republicans that like tries just a little bit too hard. You're like, okay, but you know where you live, right? Like, so do you not smoke the legal weed, Kevin, when you go home? Right. What do you do? How does all that work?
Who's the governor of California? Newsom, yeah. Like Kevin McCarthy looks more like Gavin Newsom than your Republican neighbor in a swing state. Like,
yes. And like he's from Bakersfield, which is conservative, but it's like it's not Missouri conservative, y'all. It's not. Like it's whatever. Bakersfield's weird. Anyway, all like when did the vote start on Tuesday? Wednesday?
Tuesday, I think.
Tuesday.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I think it was Tuesday.
They observed New Year's, much like
after the third. I just started making jokes like after four, does he get the free pair of steak knives? Does he get the free set of steak knives? Does he get a free coffee after the 10th? It was just all too.
I love the sub club card. It was like a very particular joke. Like, For our under 30 listeners, there used to be a sub club, and you had a physical card with these stamps that were disgusting. You licked them, and you put them on your sub club card, and you kept it in your wallet, and it would be brown and gross, and then you'd put your last stamp on, and you'd get a free sub, and it was the best.
Yeah, he got
those
more than
like $6 too,
like a so free like a free awesome. Sub club, man.
He got some kind of sandwich, that's for sure.
You got a Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert sandwich.
I can't. So, like, I don't even know where to start. So I heard a part of the interview that Stephanie Ruhle did with Lauren Boebert,
mm-hmm.
and I almost grabbed the clip, but I was like, oh, it's on MSNBC.
Oh, I gotta
fuck
watch
those
that.
People.
I love Stephanie Ruhle. Yeah.
So she's like, ma'am. She calls her ma'am. She just keeps calling Boebert ma'am. And Boebert's like, if you listen, there are people besides us who don't want him to be. She's like, no, there aren't. No, there's like eight of you. Calm down. Just shut the fuck up. It's amazing. What, like, I'm gonna let this roll, and I'm gonna let you guys kind of pick this up. But I have never seen in all my years of being alive and an American and a person who pays attention to politics, maybe not as fiendishly as I have the last like 15 years or so, or 20 really, but certainly somebody who keeps a pretty active eye on Congress. To say the least, I have never seen some shit like this before.
No.
I've never seen a person who, like, if Kevin McCarthy had a political bone in his body, like a political one, not a power hungry, craven, narcissistic, whatever the fuck he's got, which he's clearly full of. If he was really political, by vote 7, he should have been like, you know what? Fuck you. I'm out. That's it. Work it out, motherfuckers. I'm going out. Take care. I'll be sitting here until you're ready to swear all of us in, including me, you children. And then
maybe even
let
magnanimously, okay. Right? That's the word that comes to mind, you know, for the good of the party, right?
Like, all you have to do is to say something like, I thought you guys wanted me to lead you. You clearly don't. Work it out. Have a good luck. I don't know what else to tell you. Like, that would have been the thing to do, but he had to continue. Oh, go ahead.
Or perhaps, maybe, I don't know, how many of those Republicans are in districts where if as a result of this, let's say after the 10th vote, as a result of this, they could have gone with Kevin McCarthy and a few of them could have said, you know what? Fuck it. We're Democrats now. We're Democrats now. Boom. We're done.
I mean, I would never have wanted to put this particular House of Representatives, the 118th, obviously is going to be a pretty sad state of affairs. I would never have wanted to lay this at Joaquin Jeffrey's feet. We'll talk about that speech.
Man, he's amazing.
We'll talk about that
McCarthy,
speech in a minute.
Like,
but
a group of them could have gone over to Jeffries and said, we'll make you speaker. You're going to put us on these committees. We'll be Democrats. You can't expect us to be, you know, toe the line on everything. But, you know, we're going to make noise on the debt ceiling. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. But we're going to vote to keep the government open. And we're, you know, you're going to put us on these committees and we're going to shut down some investigations. And that's that. And it would have been so easy to do. It would have been so easy to do. And just said, okay, fine. Lauren Boebert, Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, fuck off. You're done. Thank you. Goodbye.
And also, like, Jim Jordan.
Well, I think Jordan
wanted...
was technically supporting McCarthy.
No, Jordan was like, when they kept voting for Jordan, I was like, he's voting for McCarthy. Like, it's always obvious when the dog is wagging the tail, right? Like,
right.
Always 100% of the time. And this, what's sad though, I mean, I hate to make it sound like their tragedy is the nation's tragedy, because there was a lot of that going around. I was like, we're fine. This nation's fine.
Yeah, that's why we talked about that at the top of the show.
Okay, it's doing fine. This is their bullshit. This is not our bullshit. This is their bullshit. This is their inability to function as a caucus. This is not our fault.
We got to watch for a week your theory about the Republican Party in real time on C-SPAN.
Thank you.
Everybody live tweeting it. And I was just like, my friend came in. I was talking to a friend the other day, and they were talking about what was happening. I was like, yeah, you need to listen to the show more, because this is exactly what Rachel's been telling people was going to happen on the show.
Trifurcation.
For a year and a half.
Of the fucking party. Here it is. Here we go, kids. So, like, when I was watching this go down, and I was like, this looks like the Missouri Senate last session. That's never a good look.
God, that's exact.
Ever.
That's a great comp.
It's the same thing. It's like 7 people who are just total dicks who don't care.
And suddenly we're talking about overalls.
Right. Suddenly we're talking about fucking overalls and like Lauren Boebert may as well have had him on.
Sean, yeah, go ahead. Yeah, the Sean, concessions. You. Have you had a look at these? I put a list of them in the show notes.
I did. I'm just going to make sure and say every time you guys knock overalls that like I'm not with you on that. In case
it's not a knock on overalls.
Anyone's
not
first time listening, I just need to go down on the record.
On the floor of the government.
It's just the idea that you dress for the job that you have, right? Like you're a lawmaker.
Overalls are great. They're very utilitarian. Yeah. I have no problem with them.
I wore them to a lot of raves in the 90s, believe me. several pairs of really well-worn
I think I've
Dickies
seen a
overalls.
Picture of you in overalls, actually.
No, you have. Okay. I do. I have one right here. I could show it to you. I could grab it and I could show. I'm staring at me in overalls from like 94. No, yeah. Nothing against overalls. I just didn't wear them on the house of any lawmaking body. If I was on a city council, I wouldn't wear overalls there.
The more pictures you share, I love it because they all look like they're part of a montage at the beginning of a movie from like in 1998.
Right.
With like you and like John Cusack.
Yeah, you're like, wear your butterfly clips from the choker. They're coming any second now. It's going to happen.
I love it. By the way, I have exactly the same kind of pictures. They're just a decade, removed, roughly.
Sure, yeah.
Quicksilver t-shirts and puka necklaces. Yeah, Sean, sorry.
Oh, so great. Yeah. Oh, man. I was just thinking of a couple of pairs of Oakleys that I've owned.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways.
Some sun in.
Where were we?
The concessions and your thoughts.
Yeah, the concessions are insane. It's like it is weird that he insisted that he become speaker after weakening the role so much.
Which was already, by the way, already going to be weak.
Right.
As the minority, like that you have one chamber.
Yeah. So
we'll
see. You
barely have a majority.
Yeah. Like all these rules changes, I don't know if drama will erupt about whether they actually come to be. I just, maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know if anyone's even talking about that, or maybe there's zero chance that, anything will happen other than the concessions we've all already heard about. But this idea that one member can call a vote to depose the speaker, that's
basically
crazy.
A vote of non-confidence at any point, right?
Can I ask Sean Diller a question? So Nancy Pelosi changed those rules like in her second speakership, I think.
Right, after taking over from Ryan.
Okay, so what were they at that point? Was it like, I think five members of the House could call for a no-confidence vote at that point?
I think she actually moved it back up to five, or maybe it's up to... I remember Boehner had the terrible situation as well, where one person could call the vote.
Which would be more fun if they were more like entertaining people. Like if it was more like the House of Commons, where they're just like, I believe you should not be the speaker.
Right.
Mr. Speaker.
And then everyone just starts
we got Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert,
Like if you don't think I want to sit on my porch and look out over Ohio fields and drink black coffee, smoking cigarettes until I switch to beer, smoking cigarettes all day. You're wrong.
Said John Boehner as he walked out the door. Yeah.
I have a question. How many times does Sean Diller think that in reference to Matt Gaetz, McCarthy called him a kitty fucker? Just how many times do you think?
I forgot about that. No,
that broad tooth kitty fucker. What do we think? Yeah. What do we think? And whatever he called fucking, Striptease Barbie or whatever they're calling her right now.
Well, so the other thing, I don't know if I can pick that up about the spending caps.
With what did I say? Buffalo Wing Barbie or something like that. Yeah.
Oh man. So this idea that he's signing off on
Wingstop Barbie.
Spending...
That's what I said. Sorry. No offense to Wingstop.
Right.
Fine product.
I keep getting sidetracked. I don't know why. About McCarthy. Oh, yeah. So they just passed a bill in the 2023 budget jacking up defense spending. That's how people who get things done get Republicans on their side, apparently. And so that's what occurred. So these rules, these concessions that McCarthy signed off on are freezing spending at 2022 levels, which would mean billions and billions of dollars in cuts in defense spending. And in addition to that, what they want would guarantee the default of the nation's debt. They don't say in the concessions they're demanding, like, let us default. But they basically are, by requiring that there are 72 hours to vote on any bill after they first see it.
Right.
You know, we're going to blow a deadline. And to what you were talking about, Adam, like, he's incredibly weak, and he has made the entire conference weaker and the National Party weaker, because five or six Republicans who are from New York or Florida or California or places where there are wealthier retirees who are Republicans, they'll just flip if the numbers work in their district. None of Correct. Them will risk their seat to do it, but you know, the right. Democratic leadership has a 3-point
district. They're not going to worry, right? If you're in a district that's a 3-point district anyway, and you get your first round of polling, you know, in a few months for your reelection campaign, and it says toss up now instead of 3 points, that's the first thought, right? That's the first conversation you're having with your team is, are we talking about a switch? Is it advantageous? Do we clear the field that way? Like, how do we handle this?
Right. Yeah. And it'll be a 2024, you know, presidential election year where Democrats do better, especially in urban and suburban areas. Abortion is still going to be big. So you could be completely right. Like, we might actually see the House flip to Democratic hands by a handful of Republican House members. That would be pretty insane.
Or even just the declining to run, right? They look at the new map, like Kinzinger in Illinois, where like they redrew the map. His district was no longer going to be safe for him. He was going to get primaried from the far right because he stood up and defended democracy. And so now it becomes a new set of calculus where it's like easier to just walk away and hand the seat over, basically.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, one last thing, like, you know, the chaos thing that makes Democrats favorable to win elections, like that's going to persist, like that Americans don't want chaos in the government.
Right.
And so this idea of having these crazy Freedom Caucus folks on as committee chairs and subcommittee chairs, like that concession is going to guarantee again that the entire Republican Party goes into 2024 weaker than they would have been.
Right. It's the mom dad theory of government, where Republicans are the dad, Democrats are the mom. Mom is order, mom is safety, mom is regularity, and dad is fun and games and crazy and it's the weekend, right? It's just crazy town, and we're gonna wrestle, and that's fine for short periods, but like when you sustain that and that's daily, that's gonna wear on people.
Well, here's what I'll say. It's fine when you're not in power.
Right.
When you're not in power, obstruction is what the U.S. government is literally designed for. It's what it's built for. It is built to stop things. That's its whole thing. Its whole jam, right? That's its whole. And like, sometimes I hate it, and then sometimes when it actually stops something, I'm like, oh fuck yeah, it's awesome. I forget what I said.
It's an incremental system.
It's
weird.
It's just strange, and it's our little weird. It's our, but like, as we were talking about at the top of the show, like the world does not like sort of automatically like convert to order. That's not how things are. Things kind of like go faster towards chaos than anything else. So our weird fucked up system's kind of effective in a lot of ways. So when you're not in power, it's very useful to be like, we're gonna like all lock arms and be like, absolutely not. And even like when Obama was president, certainly Mitch McConnell was the like the absolute poster child for what that level of obstructionism, how it can lead to like utter totalitarianism. Like I've talked about that before too, like how I never really quite understood the relationship between those two things. It happened in my full view in my lifetime and everything else, but like that's not what people want anymore. That brand is kind of the bloom has fallen off that rose. We know it has. We saw the midterms, we just talked about that. So meanwhile, what Kevin McCarthy probably should have, again, he should have dropped. He should have stopped. He should have just been like, all right, fuck it, I'm done. One of these other people can go deliver this.
If we were going into the session with Steve Scalise or anyone else as speaker, and they went on the third or fifth ballot or any of the ballots and just didn't humiliate themselves like Kevin did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be totally so much better for the Republicans. Sorry,
it would be so much better for the Republican Party, but that's not what he did, because he just had to have it. It was his shiny object. He'd already moved into the office. You know what I mean? He didn't want to pack. You know, he was already there.
He thought it would be more humiliating. That's at the end of the day.
Right. For him, not for the party, for him. None of these people care about their actual party.
Because there's no power in it. Anyway.
None.
Right, there isn't.
There's none.
There isn't. I don't understand why he thinks, I don't understand his attraction to it. I think he just decided he wanted
it. The title.
let's remind ourselves though that right now the only branch of government that the Republicans control is the House of Representatives. It's the only one, and they have a slim majority, right? Yeah. And there are people who are Republicans in the House of Representatives right now. I couldn't name four of them if you put a gun to my head, who are in Biden districts, like Biden plus four districts, Biden plus six districts, whatever. Like the there's not a lot of them.
Republicans did better than they should have, right?
Correct. Yeah. That's right. Exactly right. There's including this Santos idiot, liar, piece of shit, whatever. He could go to jail, by the way. They're going to have a special election, and like, good luck there, Kevin. So whatever it is they decide to do, if they want to shut down the government, they're not going to be able to do that because there's these other two branches of government, including the United States Senate, that is in control with the other party. So Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell now has all of the cover he needs to be like, we got to get this government open. Mm-hmm. I don't like
that.
It
was a good McConnell.
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
That was really
yeah.
good.
Say more right now.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks. So he was carting around with Zilfer and Joe last week.
Right.
Talking about that bridge they're rebuilding.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
For one point. Rob Portman.
Leadership.
Sherrod Brown.
$1.6 billion is worth what that bridge is worth. Talking about how they're going to get stuff done. So I don't see. I suspect that Mitch McConnell hates Kevin McCarthy quite a bit.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So he's not going to save his bacon. He's not going to stick his neck out for that guy. On no planet.
There's
is
a
Mitch
lot
McConnell.
Of neck to stick out. He's not going to do it.
And he'll work more expeditiously. Yes. They'll be passing stuff from the Senate side. He'll be like, dude, yes. We had 15 Republicans on this bill that Chuck and I made. Like, what yes. are you doing?
What are you doing? And also, yeah. Let me just remind you guys, this is not you guys, not you two, but all you listeners out there.
The royal we, the editorial.
The royal we, that we have the ability to confirm judges.
Right.
We just get to confirm judges. On no planet does Kyrsten Sinema shoot down a Biden judicial nominee. She's not that stupid. They are going to sail through the nomination and the confirmation process. So Biden is just going to be minting judges for 2 years while this clown car over on the other side of the hill is grilling his son. That's all they're going to be able to do is grill Hunter and retired Dr. Fauci.
Right.
That's their big plan.
Right.
And it's
which is
like,
going to get really old really, really fast. Like,
it'll
it's
be so
fast.
Funny to watch. Like, literally, they haven't thought anything into the future. Like, aren't they going to look so fucking stupid when their entire committee, which obviously will look like to anyone, you know, made to be weaponized against the Democrats.
Right.
It's about weaponization of the government, and they have no evidence of any wrongdoing, and all they want is to punish people. Like
for weaponizing the government.
And meanwhile, none of them are appealing.
Right.
Like none of them, they're all phonies. Like Jim Jordan is a scary person. He's a scary person. When he opens his mouth, he looks like he's been just smoking meth for like 72 straight hours. Whenever he talks, like he's got spittle, like he's pale. It's
you
just
don't
not
run
a good
into
look.
Him,
no.
With no one else around.
I don't. I really don't. The elevator is even in the harsh light of day.
I love the point about the Senate though, because they're just like the Senate is going to be Shooter McGavin in Happy Gilmore, just being like when they're like, yeah, just see what's going on in the House. He's like, the House? Oh no. I was too busy winning. Yeah, no. They had a good day.
And
though.
even
but
like
finished,
little
dead last.
Little Chucky Schumer with his little. I've got my glasses down to my nose. Like,
oh, you're Schumer's. Yes.
Today we are very excited to be able to say that the Senate has gotten together to pass another bipartisan piece of legislation. We hope that our colleagues in the House of Representatives comply and get this on Joe Biden's desk as soon as possible.
And then Jim Jordan goes, you know what? I eat pieces of shit like you for breakfast.
You eat pieces of shit for breakfast? That seems like the place to end it right there. Good stuff. Another fine week. Thanks for hanging out, folks.
Yeah, thanks.
The Heartland Pod is a production of MidMap Media, LLC. Follow us on Twitter with @TheHeartlandPod. With email, you can reach us, heartlandpod2020@gmail.com, online with heartlandpod.com. Subscribe, and please sign up for our Patreon with patreon.com/heartlandpod. Become a podhead or an official podgressive today and unlock all of our content. See you at the next show.